Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. For your listening discomfort and displeasure, because let's face it, the truth is, she's a harsh mistress, isn't she? You ever notice how some people can't handle the truth? And they really, really just can't handle the truth. That's what I'm talking about, you know. I had one such person not too long ago try to argue with me about geoengineering and whether or not it's a fact. And it became apparent, like, it doesn't matter what evidence you got, they're just not going to believe it. So they set these impossible tasks and goals for you. And that's what people do to try and discourage you. That's what they do. They say, you're not right because you haven't fulfilled this random request that is incredibly difficult and incredibly expensive. You know, therefore, what you're saying is nonsense and I don't have to pay attention to it, right? That kind of crap. Unbelievable. Now, I believe we're going to have a guest connected up with us in a moment, Dr. Bob Malamede. And if we're lucky, we'll also be later joined by Chuck O'Challey of the O'Challey Effect, while he has a little bit of a cool down from his show that he just did. Now, just got to have a word with the producer. Hey, bro, would you mind connecting up Dr. Bob Malamede now? He's ready. He's ready and waiting. For those of you who don't know, Dr. Bob Malamede
is a pretty onto it professor. One of those people who has postulated that New Zealand, as well as the rest of the world, is cannabinoid deficient. Hello. Endocannabinoids. Hello, Bob. 1 second. Cannabinoid deficiency, ladies and gentlemen, it is really, really, really bad news. You're born with cannabis receivers, like cannabinoid receptors in your cells, right? That's what you're born with. They're there for a reason. You need to supplement them, and that's why the people who don't use or supplement any of their endocannabinoid system wind up becoming really frigid, backward-thinking, kind of boring, and unable to accomplish the feat of self-analysis.
Now, it's pretty sad, but that is, in my opinion, an illness due to, shall we say, a nutrient deficiency. How do you define what a nutrient is? You take it away, and then you see if a disease accrues. Closed-mindedness, I think, is actually a disease. Dr. Bob Malamede is my very special guest. Welcome.
Hello there, Vinny. Good to see you, hear you.
I get that a lot.
So cannabinoid deficiency, you know, it's prevalent, but the opposite is also emerging now, and I think we're about to see and experience in the fairly near future a global change that's going to propel us into a safe, sound future as the backward-looking people that have run the world are replaced by the forward-looking people, supplemented by a variety of technological changes that will eliminate a lot of the problems that we have in terms of pollution and the cost of energy, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that, you know, things can look very bright here, and I think that these technological changes go hand in hand with the mental changes that are resulting from the increased cannabinoid activity in the human population.
Are you saying that cannabis has actually become more readily consumed over time? I know that that has been the case when we've looked at the amount of cannabis use that's gone up after its criminalization due to the black market effect, but they found that when it's legalized, there's a little bit of a hype there to get everybody really baked because it's new and it's fantastic, but they found that habitual usage drops as well, markedly, like about 2/3 so. At least that was the case in the Netherlands. And I'm wondering, well, is it...
numbers coming out of Colorado, I'm not sure what those numbers are.
Well, I wonder if there's a chilling effect that happens. Maybe because alcohol was illegal back in the day, it was more expensive and it was dangerous and it was provided by bootleggers and things like that. But not everybody could get their hands on it. So it was actually something that you did because you were compelled to do it, because you were, you had the contact, you were able to get into the speakeasy. And now the thing has happened where people's entire social relationships, their business relationships, in fact, revolve around the use of cannabis as an illegal substance. And these are people they would ordinarily not even bother hanging around with. And that's what happens when cannabis legalization comes into the full front. A whole bunch of people realize that they can now change their social circles because they don't have to be a criminal anymore.
You know, I don't know that that's so true, though. From what I see, what I've seen as well, be it here in Vermont or in Colorado or in New York, I mean, the people who like to get high will get high. There is certainly, you know, the so-called cannabis criminals, because they're violating absurd laws out of righteousness and intelligence. you know, you have quite a spectrum of people anyway, I found, who use cannabis, and the people that you wind up liking, I find typically cannabis users like cannabis users because cannabis users are more peaceful and more open-minded and more giving. You know, they represent a evolutionary advancement that has always been occurring from the point of view of the increase in cannabinoid receptor activity in the various evolutionarily advanced areas of the brain, and the fact that it's even included in mother's milk, you know, so that mammals have selected to put psychoactive cannabinoids in the first thing you give an infant, suggests that this is good, and only an idiot would suggest that it's bad, you know?
Well, in fact, there was a case in New Zealand where a woman was tested positive for cannabis in her breast milk, and she pled guilty, and then they took her child off her.
Well, you know, I think that's totally ridiculous, but I also would say that I don't think any excessive cannabis use or use of anything other than good, healthy food during pregnancy makes sense. Cannabis is very powerful in the way it interacts, because it interacts with everything. And although we always select for more and more cannabis use in the brain in particular, it can affect other things that are, you know, it's such an incredibly complex unfolding to go from a sperm and an egg to a baby that's being born. And certainly when that baby is born, you know, the need for more cannabinoids is evidenced by the fact that it's in mother's milk. But earlier on, the levels that are there have been selected for through, in an ideal sense, an appropriate diet. And there are times that cannabis would be a necessary nutrient as an appropriate diet for the mother, you know, and to consume it. But in general, I would be very leery of taking too much of anything, even something good, during pregnancy, other than eating really good foods, balanced diet, according to what I would define as a balanced diet, you know, and organic type food.
Exactly. No lettuce on your cheeseburgers, ladies. I also think that there's an inherent dietary supplementary kind of way of it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. There's a myth going around that cannabis does not get you high if it's not heated at all.
That's not a myth, because what's in the bud, you know, of a fresh bud is THC acid, not THC. And the THC acid gets decarboxylated. I always forget the numbers because I'm a retard when it comes to forgetting numbers, you know.
So discombobulated.
Yeah, you want to heat it up to the sufficient temperature for a sufficient duration of time in order to turn THC acid into THC. But you want to do it under some very defined conditions, in particular from what I know. And, you know, there are people who know a lot more because they're doing it for their livelihood, et cetera. But from what I gather, from a scientific point of view and people in the area who are experts, you know, using some kind of a high-pressure temperature device so that you don't lose the volatiles, you know. That's one of the big things for all of the different methodologies that people use. You've got to eventually get rid of whatever solvent it's in, unless you didn't use a solvent, in which case you wind up losing a lot of other things. So be it CO2 or butane or alcohol, you know, or olive oil, whatever you're doing, there's different ways to then further process it. But you don't want to, in general, lose all of the aromatics, which are the things that are going to evaporate at the lowest temperature. So if you do, you know, you can do extracts with things like oxalate extractors where the temperature will never go above the temperature of the alcohol. But you, in the end, you have to get rid of the alcohol that you've used to get down to your pure material. So there are different ways of going about that again, but you'd want to ideally get rid of the final step of that with a high-pressure system so that you wouldn't lose the volatiles. And all of these different chemicals contribute to the activity of the cannabis, you know, because they all plug into these similar and related pathways and touch related receptors. You know, it's such an incredible phenomena, but so many plant materials that we know to be healthy, you know, things coming out of ginger or coming out of grapes or coming out of wine, you know, we know they're healthy and they have often common modes of action in terms of being anti-inflammatory and therefore inhibiting excess sugar burning and often turning on fat burning, which has anti-inflammatory properties.
Now, also, if you want to take your inflammation down, sometimes if you make an inflammatory statement, that'll also help. We're also now joined by Chuck O'Celli of the O'Celli Effect. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hello. Good evening, guys. How are you? I was listening to the discussion, and really great stuff. I'm glad to hear this. So, thank you.
You're welcome, and also thank you for joining us. Do you have any questions for Dr. Bob? Well, you know, he's kind of one of those people that you just sort of wind up and let him go.
Well, no, I hear that. That's for sure. You know, I have always looked at this issue. And this is long before the modern kind of, you know, internet-based, you know, hey, cannabis freedom movement. I mean, I looked at it in the 90s, let's just say, when I was a musician. And, I mean, I even did, you know, like shows that were to raise funds for organizations like Normal and things like that. And I always thought of it as very much a no-brainer kind of situation with this. I don't understand what the conflict is, you know, when people talk about it as use, you know, when they're talking about use as a drug, let's just say, and I hate even equating it to any of the other things that we call drugs.
No, it's a nutrient.
Yeah, it's a nutrient, and it just so happens to have some of these effects. And people talk about it as, you know, one of these things that can be abused and this and that. But here's the truth. I mean, anything that you find on this planet, whether it be natural or man-made, it seems as though it's the character of the user and the intentionality of the individual that really, you know, determines the outcome for the use of anything.
I have a confession to make. There was a time when I was completely strung out on ham.
Oh, there you go. See,
I like peanut butter and jelly. Still, after all these years.
Oh, listen, I
just hook it to my veins, you know. Just hook it to my veins.
I used to love chocolate myself, you know, until I actually found out what they put in that crap. But anyway,
chocolate can be good. Chocolate has chemicals that touch into the endocannabinoid system, actually. But you got, you know, you want good chocolate, not necessarily
unregulated black mark dark chocolate.
Well, there's a big difference in different chocolates, you know, and quality chocolates. You know, chocolate was, you know, the food of the gods there, right? Because it does have strong antioxidant properties and therefore is beneficial.
See, now that was going to be my point, is that exactly when you have something that hasn't been manipulated or hijacked and is pretty much, you know, in a good form, in a natural sense, even something like chocolate actually can be extremely beneficial, right? So, but it's all about the use. I mean, listen, if you subsist on a diet of chocolate, though, and you continuously eat it, and you especially eat the cheap crap that contains all of these other wonderful, you know, chemicals that you can barely even pronounce if you can find out what's in them, right? When you eat that continuously, I mean, this is the kind of thing that'll kill you. You know, but at the same time, it's extremely beneficial. And I think it's all got to do with the usage of the thing, you know, no matter what it is. I mean, it's always been baffling to me that people can't wrap their minds around. It's the attitude and the approach of the individual, not the substance, not the tool, not the elements. You know, do you find that that's one of the most difficult things to get people to understand when it comes to the use of cannabis?
Well, I would go a step further than that, because I think that everyone has such unique biochemistry, but there are certain general rules. And for the people who like cannabis, they're the people who I believe typically make more endocannabinoids, in particular in their brain, in particular in the areas of their mind that regulate open-mindedness. And there's scientific documentation for all of that. So you have the ability to generate new nerve cells, and you have the ability to rewire them so that you make new connections. So those people who naturally are endowed in those abilities like cannabis because it accelerates and accentuates their natural predisposition. Mm-hmm. But the people on the other end of the scale, again, with respect to that one phenotype of open-mindedness in particular, which does wind up tying in with memory. We can go through a bunch of layers here. There is a very holistic, tangled web in here of what goes on. But, you know, in general, you have to see what's happening for a particular person. They have to be able to look at what they're feeling and why they're taking it in order to then potentially benefit from it or not. If you're so closed-minded because of your biochemistry that to change your mind, to open your mind to something new is painful for you because it's a stressor, then you avoid that. And then if you try cannabis and it forces you into that direction, you know, for some it'll open them up, and for others it'll close them up even more. You know, because then they'll be more convinced than ever of how horrible it is, because it was a horrible experience for them because they couldn't open into basically the light.
Well, right. So it's got a lot more to do with the predisposition of the individual. See, that's what the problem is with all this stuff, I think. I mean, I even look at the use of firearms in very much the same way, and people think I'm nuts. I say, listen, it's not about the tool. It's about the attitude. It's about the mindset. You know, I can imagine, and you know what? Forget about imagine. Let's talk frankly here. If I use a little bit, okay, and I'm talking a very small amount, and I just smoke a little bit, you know what? That's actually an enhancement. When I go too far and I know where my limits are and I know the feelings that begin to come around, I can become sort of lethargic, et cetera, right? But I also know that with the proper usage, for me personally, it can be extremely productive. It can actually help with all sorts of problems like higher anxiety, different health conditions can be, you know, dealt with and actually treated as opposed to masked, which most things in big pharmaceutical circles do, right? And there's actually progress that can be made with the proper application. Okay, and that's speaking personally, right? Now, that doesn't mean that everybody...
There's a bit of evidence to support that, actually, Chuck. There was a study published, I think, a couple of months ago, actually, that said that a lot of regular cannabis users are found to also be suffering from unknown or undiagnosed illnesses and things that the cannabis is actually helping.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's true of everyone, because cannabis, by virtue of the fact that it literally regulates everything in your body, from conception until death. And again, meaning your immune system, digestive, cardiovascular, nervous system, bones, skin, everything is homeostatically regulated by the cannabis that you make. But we all age, and in fact, cannabis activity is an anti-aging drug. So as we age and we approach equilibrium, equilibrium is a far from equilibrium phase change is death versus the formation of life, which is another far from equilibrium phase change in the direction of organization rather than the collapse of organization. And we need more cannabinoid activity. And while taking a couple of tokes or a joint, you know, somewhere in that spectrum might be a normal use, there are so many people that benefit. I myself, at this point, I take about a quarter of a gram a day of good quality extract. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't get that stoned. I mean, I'm pretty stoned right now, but this is how I live. It becomes the way you function. It becomes your normal because I'm naturally in that direction. I tend to be an airhead. I'm very loosely wired. I've always been like that. You know, it's called a late bloomer. I kind of float along, you know. But I've learned now how to harness that and utilize that as really a vital tool for how I think and how I'm able to move forward. But again, I'm taking a relatively large amount of oil every day.
You see, now, what I also find fascinating is that we are inundated with anxiety-based disorders, you know, especially in American society. There are plenty of people that have tons of these disorders that are being diagnosed, and many of them undiagnosed, and we're not just talking about veterans and things like that, but this is an issue that, again, I look at and I say to myself, you know, through my own personal experience, okay, because, well, let's just be honest. I mean, I have been diagnosed in the past with PTSD for particular reasons. And I've got to tell you something. No other use of any nutrient has ever assisted me better than the use of cannabis, not on a massive scale and not necessarily on a continuous scale, but generally speaking, because of the erratic nature of the disorder, there are certain times when it completely takes care of the symptoms that emerge from it.
Yeah, and nice to have a doobie with you.
Yeah, well, there you go. But, you know, and that's the truth of it. And it just seems to me very odd that there isn't more study going into that. I mean, I guess it's because you can push the entire benzo family of crap down people's throats and give them that as the solution for the cessation of the problems that emerge because of all of these anxiety-based disorders. But, I mean, I wonder if you could explain to people why that actually works. Since you talk directly about the receptors in the brain, there is a good scientific reason why what I'm saying about a little bit of smoke actually could help you with PTSD, and I know it for a fact because I've done it myself, you know. But I wonder if you could sort of explain to people how that's part of the reality as well, because that's one of those things I would love to hear articulated a lot more often.
Well, I myself have PTSD, so I understand it. But before I elaborate on that at all, I'd like to just really say something that just really bugs my ass, you know? I mean, here you are and I am human beings on this planet. And who the hell are these so-called authorities, you know, the governmentally ill people that are telling us that you say you use this plant and it's good for you, but I don't care that you say that. I don't care that you found that out because we haven't gone through the FDA trial to prove it and it's an illegal. That's a load of horseshit, you know? We're no longer in the kind of world where we're going to tolerate that crap from these idiots that have been running the world and by virtue of cannabis prohibition more than anything else have proven what a bunch of incompetent assholes have been running the world. And all you have to do is look at the weaponry and the wars and the insanity to know that the people who are running the world have failed and they have to be replaced with more cannabinoid-endowed people, period.
Now, there are, conveniently, a lot of people now who are very well endowed with their cannabinoid reserve. And thank God, too, because I was in New Zealand. We're going through what I've dubbed the Great Dope Drought of 2016. There has been a lot of stories around circles of friends and all of those kind of things all around the place. There's nothing round. And a lot of people just want it for themselves, recreationally, but there's also those other benefits. But I think that the worst sufferers are those people who need it for really exacerbated medical conditions, you know, like the people who will die or virtually not be able to move or be able to function at all without it, that kind of thing. Those are the people that truly suffer. Those are the people that can't really walk down the road to go to a gang member.
We become that way because we haven't had enough. You don't wait till you're sick to take it. You take it to prevent you from getting sick. We all need it. It's an essential nutrient for modern man.
It's a preventative measure, right?
It's an essential nutrient because if you consume more, based on scientific studies with animals, as well as a variety of other less direct evidences, but if you consume more, you live longer. You know, every doctor, I'm sure, in New Zealand will tell you take omega-3 fatty acids and essential fatty acids and fish oil. Well, why are they good for you? Because your body makes it into pot. So, you know, the fact that you consume it as fish oil or the fact that you consume it as a joint, you know, whatever works, whatever you need to make yourself feel better physically and mentally, because they're all the same. Physically and mentally are part of the same thing. It's called you.
Well, right, absolutely, and what is interesting to me is something that I only started to wrap my mind around a couple of years ago, and that is that, you know, the idea, because they bring into these conversations the discussions of the use of other illicit drugs, and you know, and well, let me correct myself, other illicit drugs. First of all, cannabis is not a drug per se, okay? Because drugs to me need to be manufactured. All right. Cannabis exists as it exists. It's fine. Doesn't need your help to make it into something else, first of all. But anyway, back to it. It seems to me as though the reaching out for these particular substances, in fact, the root of addiction, it seems to me, is based on nutritional deficiencies. And this is one of the larger ones for sure. But I mean, there is a bunch of nutritional deficiencies. It seems as though when you try and treat somebody who's a heroin addict, even, you'll find that if you correct their nutritional imbalances, they don't seem to have that that aching desire to go back to the drug, you know. And if we can start to, first of all, remove it from the conversation regarding drugs, cannabis itself, I think that would be a positive step. But also, I think the nutritional deficiencies are really the key to ending that whole system of control that I see through the manufacture and distribution of many really addictive and actually dangerous substances that are refined by men for the purposes of doing exactly that. I mean, what do you think of that particular concept?
Well, no, that's absolutely true because we are what we eat, and I'm simply saying that cannabis is one of the things that we must eat if we want to be healthy, because there's a strong lesson taught to us by nature if we just bother to look at what's right in front of our faces, and that is that cannabinoid activity has evolutionarily continuously increased, because what it allows for is that which is selected for by evolution, which is adaptability. And we see that adaptability, you know, in terms of our discussion here, as open-mindedness, because then you're adapting to new information. That's what being open-minded is. Mm-hmm. So that's the evolutionarily highest form of adaptability, and that works on top of the complexity of humanity. But, you know, the endocannabinoid receptors, specifically the CB1 receptor that gets you high, first appeared with the emergence of vertebrates. And what that's telling you is that, because there's a big difference between an invertebrate and a vertebrate. And the big difference.
An invertebrate is an Englishman that doesn't have a spine.
You know, invertebrates meaning, you know, spiders and bugs and crustaceans, insects and crustaceans, basically. And, you know, they, if you just think about the obvious, they have a shell around them. So they're not going to have the kind of adaptable flexibility as having an internal skeleton with muscles and skin on it. The more you use it, it simply grows. So an exact opposite kind of a body plan evolved. And along with that came big changes in the brain, because for the first time you had the CB1 receptor. And the brain is the most complex organ of any species. Man happens to be the most complex of all species. But even early on, in order to generate the complexity of the brain, you needed to make energy efficiently. And when you make energy efficiently, you make it dangerously by virtue of the biochemistry, the electron transport system. And what the cannabinoid system does via the CB1 receptor is it fine-tunes the calcium channels that are involved in the activation of energy production, but also involved in the production of free radicals. And by fine-tuning that, which is what the cannabinoid system does, the CB1 receptor does, you're able to generate more and more complexity. And think about your brain. It's 20% of your body weight, but it uses, I mean, it's 5% of your body weight, but it uses 20% of your energy. That's why your head's always hot. And if your head gets too hot, the cells will die. So the cannabinoid system has been an essential component of allowing for evolutionary advancement.
So which is why humans were the first to develop opposable thumbs for rolling joints.
Well, that's why cannabis was one of the first agricultural crops. It believed to have first been, you know, used and grown by the pygmies 10,000 years ago at the beginning of the agricultural era, because it gave them food, fiber, medicine, material. It gave them everything you needed. If you needed one plant, that was the one plant you needed.
See, and I thought the opposable thumb was actually created to help us with keeping happy mates. But, hey, you know, I got my own viewpoint on it. You can draw your own conclusions out there about that. But anyway, yes.
Preferably pictorially.
That too. But, you know, all joking aside, I mean, it does seem to be just, I mean, I don't know how to put it any other way. It's like the obvious answer to a lot of this stuff. I mean, we see a great deal of damage, which has been done, you know, via these different chemicals. We see a lot of people that are going around with brain injuries. And, I mean, even for repairing the brain, you know, post-traumatic problem, right? Once again, I mean, when you got something like post-concussive syndrome, it seems to me as though there is no scientific reasoning by which you can even state that cannabis is not a good thing when you have damage to the brain as well.
It's very easy for the establishment to say that you have no proof, because the fact that you have 1,000 people that benefited from it doesn't count. Because the only thing that counts in the minds of the establishment is whether or not it's gone through an FDA trial. And that is just a whole load of shit, because the trials, if you think about it, are absurd. What are they doing? First of all, they're using toxic chemicals that don't have a normal role in the normal biochemistry of living entities. So already you're doing a weird thing to begin with. And then, because of that, these things, aside from the horrible side effects, are often so horrendously toxic, so that even something like an aspirin has a therapeutic index of 15 to 1. You take 2 aspirin, you get rid of your headache. You take 30 and you die from your gut bleeding. Mm-hmm. Well, cannabis, they estimate it's 40,000 to 1. So it's like the safest thing you could possibly consume. All we're looking at really is a battle between the cavemen-like people, the blips, the backward-looking cannabinoid-deficient people, and the more modern people who believe more in cooperation rather than aggression. And that's why we're seeing this change spreading over the world now. We're seeing a global change on all levels. The economic systems are going crazy. The weather systems are going crazy. The financial systems are going crazy. The political systems are going crazy. And what I believe will emerge is a new world with new technology, clean technology, no pollution, and where people are no longer of the basic alcohol mentality, but we've transited to a basically cannabis mentality. But I have to go now because I got to shut up because my son is going to sleep and I'm keeping him awake. So it's been fun. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you. Dr. Bob, do you have by chance a website or something like that you'd be able to share with us before you jump off?
You know, I have to put a proper one up. I used to have one at the university, but they closed that one down, and I'm in the process of trying to deal with putting it up. I have a drbobmelamed.com. It's got, you know, I just threw something together a long time ago, so it's got a little bit on it, but I don't have a proper one. The best way to learn the kind of stuff that I babble about is YouTube. I've got over 80 YouTubes out there.
That's right. Okay, so Dr. Bob Melamed, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you later.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. Bye, guys. Nice.
Eloquent in its brevity. We're still left with Chuck O'Challey, conveniently, but it's discoveries like Bob's that have made me question and get angry with almost every kind of establishment doctrine and establishment line, you know? Almost like an immune system repelling fucking parasites.
Well, you know, and that's what it comes down to, Benny, because look, you know what it states to me to listen to a guy like him and to you know, once again kind of see the reaffirmation of a lot of research that I've done on this and a personal experimentation as well. You know, the fact is that we seem to be confronted by really two societies. You know, and this is among the people. We're not even talking about the oligarchy to begin with, but there are literally two societies among the population anymore. And it seems as though one of them is readily adherent to the petrol or the, should I say, the oil-based society. That is part of what's going on. And, I mean, all of that folds very well into the big pharmaceutical companies because a whole lot of their stuff is petroleum-based, right? You see that the military-industrial complexes that function throughout the planet are all quite a bit fueled by what, again? Oh, that's right, petroleum. You see that political strangleholds on various nations are also, it just seems as though there is a society that is dependent upon that. And then there is a new emerging kind of system, which has been emerging for some time, that could almost find itself based in hemp. I don't know. Have you noticed that kind of
trend?
Almost trend happening? I mean, really right before our eyes, it's emerging, I think.
People have been beating this drum to legalize pot and all the medical benefits and everything for decades and decades. And the argument was won back before the 80s even begun, you know.
It's right.
And it's like that's when the drug war really hyped up. So what did I say to somebody today? Just because you're right doesn't mean that a bunch of ruthless criminals that are interconnected with most of the largest business and banking corporations in the world are suddenly going to go belly up because you've got the truth and the proof, okay? They can lie, they can divert, they can threaten. There's infinite amount of things that they can prevent from happening. And a recent article that I was tagged in, I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but the headline's kind of like, propaganda piece. It says that the new unregulated cannabis market in America has been surveyed, and only 17% of the edible products surveyed actually were labeled properly, right? There's a whole bunch of pesticides and things like that getting into it because it's an unregulated market. Really? Isn't the entire point of having cannabis legal that it be regulated? What the hell is the point in legalizing a substance and not having any regulation on it, right? Now,
yeah.
Okay, so what are you doing, bro? You're just setting people up to fail so that the cheapest, nastiest, scumbaggeriest con men in the business will get into the dope game because of the dope game's going, and they will screw people over, just like they did in the black market. What? Where is the legislative framework to have a system that works, right? Like alcohol works. You know, in New Zealand, there's only 1,000 people killed a year. There's only 40% of homicides on the weekend caused by alcohol, only 75% of weekend accidents and injuries and things like that. Only 30% of the child abuse and family violence and things like that. You know, the system works great.
Yeah, I always love the great feeding trough of alcohol as an industry. That's just fine and dandy, and to me, again, one of these things that that speaks to what happens when you tax and regulate and all this other stuff. Look, it comes down to this, and I've wondered this as well, and I want you to ponder it for a second. I don't know about the Constitution where you are, but I'm imagining that in most of the Western nations, there is a constitutional portion that is supposed to be there as your, you know, as your given rights, et cetera, that states that you have the freedom to practice any spiritual practice you wish, and the government is not allowed to interfere in that. Now, is that the case in New Zealand?
Nah, well, it is and it isn't. Right.
Well, on the books, let's say. I mean, look,
yeah, you of want course. To get to the on the reality. Books, yes. But in reality, no. So on the books, okay. Yeah, you can say, all right, well, I've proven that I'm sovereign and you don't own me and I've renounced my birth certificate and so on and so forth. And the reality is that in order to do that, they steal everything that you ever earned in your entire life and reduce you to absolutely nothing and take your family and your possessions and your money and everything you've ever worked for or lived for away from you, and then you don't have to pay tax.
Oh, right. Okay, so it is the same as America. Okay, good deal. But here's the thing. On the books, if you don't attempt to extract yourself from the system, let's just say you think it still works. Okay. Bottom line, don't you have the freedom to practice religion ostensibly on the surface in New Zealand?
Allegedly.
All right. Here's my question. If it was part of your spiritual practice to engage in the use of a particular plant, regardless of what that plant was, and this could be just part of what is, doesn't that mean that you don't already have the right, if it's integrated into your spiritual practices, to partake of that particular plant? I mean, is that something that sounds completely crazy to you?
Well, that depends. Theoretically, am I a ruthless criminal sociopath with more money and power than God who wants to control everything and prevent the human race from actually evolving? Or am I just me?
Oh, well, listen, I can't go into that. I mean, we don't have enough time to go into the reality of what it would be like. And I don't have the energy to assume that kind of role where I could become the sociopath for you tonight and try and play that role.
Okay, so I'll be the sociopath. You be the nice guy. Okay.
Okay. No, that works out. No, but for real, you're just John every day. You actually think that the news isn't lying to you, and you think your politicians might actually be representing you, and you think that the big corporations are there to serve you because it's a market that, you know, bears itself out, you know, in a fair way, and there isn't a group of criminals that actually controls everything. Just imagine that for a moment for me, if you will.
No, I have, you know, and I've got into deep thought about this on a number of occasions, you know. I said to my mates, hey, you know, wouldn't it be really awesome, bro, if we woke up tomorrow and it turns out that we were wrong all along, like somebody actually produced rock hard evidence that the Rothschilds never actually existed, that there's no such thing as corruption. Everything is sunshine and rainbows, and that the last, you know, couple of decades of our life that we've been fighting for truth or anything like that, it's all been a lie. And I was like, man, that would be great.
You know, that's exactly how I feel about it. Precisely. I really, truthfully, I want somebody to come to me and tell me that this has all been a grand delusion. And here, in fact, is the thing that will cure it for you. And you've just seen things in the world that weren't really there. That's what I'd love. I would love to have that happen tomorrow. I would. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a Pandora's box, isn't it?
That's true. But just imagine for a moment, though. I mean, if you just assume that, you know, the laws are actually enforced, you know, according to the way they're written, and people actually understand them, and, you know, there is a society based on not necessarily justice, but the rule of law, let's just say. How about that? Because forget the concept of justice. That's, you know, acquiescence to an ancient goddess religion. But the truth about it, and you were actually in a fair field of play as far as your life goes, Vinny. What about the concept of, if this is part of your spiritual practice? Because here's the interesting thing. I actually find that there is justification for use of the plant in a lot of religious practices, and people don't know that. Now, that's
I also found that there's a lot of people who just use it illegally, and a lot of people don't know that either. But there was, in fact, a Cantheist religious church. I think it might have been in Connecticut. Correct me if I'm wrong. It might have been one of the more southern, roundabout New Orleans kind type states. I don't remember exactly. But after all this legalization started happening in other states, they reapplied for the city council to have basically permission, or rather to assert their right to use it as part of their religious practice. And they did that because they didn't want to just be smoking in their church and stuff like that and have people with guns run in. And it came down to the local magistrate just saying, nah. Right, and it's just... Look, if something doesn't make sense, it's usually because there's some kind of scumbaggery, lying scum involved, right? Who have an angle, who have some kind of leverage, who have some kind of blackmail, you know, just basically, you can assume and imagine away the worst possible things that you could ever conceive of, and they'll usually be a lot rosier than the reality.
Yeah, that's the truth. So what it really comes down to is, regardless of what the rights are, the laws are, regardless of what the reality is, this is going to be pushed in a particular direction because, you know, and you can fill in the blank. Yeah. That's the truth of it all, isn't it? That's the truth of what's happening, especially with the chemical culture, let's just say. You know, and that's why I say that it seems as though, yes, it's been going on for decades, longer than you or I have been alive. There has been this effort to legalize, to normalize the use of cannabis, just cannabis, mind you. Although, personally, I figure that there should be no criminalization attached to the use of any chemical, you know, that one chooses to personally imbibe. I think that should be the reality, and if that became the new normal, you would have a lot less of a problem. I think that there's no reason to regulate any of it, and eventually things will come to an equilibrium that would be entirely different than what we see now. I mean, what do you think about that aspect of it? Just, you know, they should just get out of the business of regulation or dealing with this stuff entirely.
Well, they crave power and control, so they're exactly where they want to be, and there's a reason why they cluster in institutions and hierarchies, right? And again, it doesn't matter about what your intentions are per se in terms of the actual effect. What matters is we currently live in an unjust system, so irregardless of what you try to put into the justice system, you're almost guaranteed an unjust result. And I think that putting the cannabis users into that system is probably not the best idea in the first place. And I recall watching, Escape from Absalom just the other day. You know, I was just like, man, I haven't seen this movie like in a long time, since before becoming a truther. I'm going to watch this. And the opening credits is, in 2022, prisons have been privatized worldwide. Human prisoners are used to maximize profit on a global scale, and it is big business.
It's like, oh my God, how accurate is that? But in that movie, the people weren't sent to prison for smoking a joint. In reality, they do. In some cases, I heard of one guy who is now serving life in prison for 3 joints. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've come to a place where possession of a plant substance is now tantamount to committing murder. Actually, in some cases, you can find a more lenient sentence being delivered to people in this country anyway, for taking of a life. I mean, literally speaking, I mean, manslaughter and even murder all the way up. I mean, I don't think premeditated murder has been outdone, let's just say, by a lot of convictions for weed yet. But it's coming. And it just seems like that is an interesting aspect here that, no matter what the excuse is, look, there's a need for more prisoners. There's a need for more slave labor. There's a need for more chattel to be counted into the great prison industrial complex, which we don't talk about very often, I think. And this is just, it is there for the sake of itself. And the whole thing is rather backwards, Vinny. I mean,
you know why that is? Because the people that are sitting in prison for unjust reasons don't have access to the internet. They can't listen to our shows. They can't join the conversation. They can't do anything to voice their own concerns.
Yeah, exactly. But isn't that the case? It's all about the divide and conquer strategy. It is still the best and most often used strategy for dealing with the population. You keep us compartmentalized. You keep us at war with one another. You keep us demonizing one another for various different justifications.
Oh, I think it's much more simple than that. It's kind of like Ransom and Maze, right? I mean, there's been, I forget who told me this, but it turns out that the same kind of people who design the layouts of prisons are the same kind of people who design the layouts for public schooling systems. And I was just thinking, whoa, what's that? What's that? You get trained to accept a prison industrial complex reality from a very young age, before the age of 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it means that inexorably some of the people are going to try and reject that programming, and the system's designed to like snatch the little cattle that wanders away from the herd and then turn them into mincemeat, that kind of thing, in order to feed the machine. And that's how they do it. We're being produced sort of like free range cattle, and every now and again they want to snatch one of us or take somebody's children off them. You know, it's just like that. The entire global society is manufactured in such a way. And what I find is truly aggravating about it is that as soon as you realize that you're in a matrix, when you try to escape from it, you realize that you've only escaped into another matrix, for which the escape is only into another matrix. People going from doing their jobs and things like that and living these relatively meaningless slave existences, not fulfilling their potential, not inspiring themselves creatively. And they go from that to believing everything that they see online, every crazy conspiracy theory, everything, right? And then they realize, oh my God, no, that's not actually the truth at all. And in fact, the truth movement is populated with a whole bunch of manipulative, psychopathic salesman wankers, just like the old world that I just came from. And after that, there's still more realizations to come that we haven't even perceived yet. That's the indicative nature of a holographic universe, a pattern that keeps infinitely presenting itself to you, no matter how deep you focus in on it. Isn't that what life is about? A perpetual waking dream from something that repeats itself and repeats itself, from which you can never awaken. That's why people are being driven crazy, and I think cannabis might help. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Chuck Ocelli from the Ocelli Effect. You're on American Freedom Radio right here, and we will be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I love this place. It's really right. It's nice. It's magical. It's like that scene in Legend with Tom Cruise, the real young one, before he became a Scientologist. Where everything's just kind of like beautiful, and it's like these magical creatures running around. Magical creatures like Chuck O'Jelly from the O'Jelly Effect. Welcome back.
Magical creature. You know, that's the first time I've ever been described that way. Thank you.
Well, there is a first time for everything.
Unfortunately, yes.
And you do not get a second chance at a first impression joke.
I've heard that. I have heard that, you know. Oh, boy. You know, and this, by the way, is what happens when two talk show radio hosts get together for an unscripted discussion about God knows what, God knows when, and God knows why. So here we are.
There was this one thing I wanted to read out, actually. Have you been looking into geoengineering much at all? I've been, like, it's been big lately, especially in Auckland here, because we just had a big spray day, which is just, like, the most blatant I've ever seen it. And you get into the arguments with these people, and I was just, like, dumbfounded, I guess is the word, by the extraordinary attention to ignoring detail. Have you ever noticed that kind of fact whenever you're trying to explain something to people, they just don't get it, and it's not just that they don't get it. They don't get it so badly that it's almost hilarious to watch, you know? Schadenfreude.
You know what? And I observed this last night, not tonight, but last night when I was talking to Elena Friedland on my show, right? I had to bring it up because whenever you try and discuss chemtrails, geoengineering, whatever it is you want to call it, whenever you try and discuss this with somebody who hasn't taken the time to look it up, hasn't actually seized upon the interest, you know, hasn't decided that, gee, those straight lines in the sky look pretty strange and they're turning into cloud banks, some of them, and God, they look odd. When you try and point this out to somebody for the first time, you know what the most remarkable thing is to me is that you can't even get them to look up. You can't. It's like, listen, you realize this is going on, and they immediately say, oh, okay, so you're one of those people that believe in, you know, conspiracies and this kind of thing. And it's like, that's a lot of extrapolation for me trying to tell you that there is something in the world around you that you're not observing. Please try and observe it. Look up at the sky. And I mean, literally, I can be standing there with many lines over both of our heads during this conversation. And all they have to do is tip their heads back and look. And will they do it?
Hey, I've got a great idea. You get a mirror, just a small mirror, and a razor blade, and a rolled up dollar bill. And you go up to people in the street, and you say, hey, bro, do you want a line? And then just show them the chemtrails through the mirror?
That's a good idea. Wait a minute. Now you may have just struck upon something. I like this, you know, because you can't even. Yes. But see now, will they even look at the mirror? Will they even observe it? I don't know how far that goes because I've never been one of these people that was unwilling to examine something. I mean, look, I started out, you know, doing discussions, talks with people, explaining things to people, very much focused on the Kennedy assassination, right? All right. There are many people who just don't want to look at it, don't want to examine it, don't think it's relevant. That's fine and dandy and great. Okay. Now, when you attempt to show them anything, they will refuse to look at it. They'll refuse to look at it. But if you can sort of sneak it in another way, in some cases, you can get people to begin to examine it kind of by tricking them. And I don't like to do that. You know, it's a weird situation.
It's called having a conscience, bro. Okay,
well, what do you explain this to me? Well, I could lie to you and trick you and deceive you into knowing the truth, but I don't feel comfortable doing that.
See, is that, that's what it is. I can't get comfortable with trying to fool somebody into seeing something. I'm not a magician. I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? It's not about the sleight of hand for me. To me, it's about calling out the sleight of hand. You know what I mean? And yeah, telling people that you're...
If you don't call out the sleight of hand, you get slighted.
Right. Right. But you've got a good point about this mirror. I'm telling you now that even when you point out things to people, though, but here's the fun part. Even if it is readily evident in that mirror, even if it is easily witnessed by just glancing at the mirror that there's something odd over their heads. Here's the thing. Will they even bother with it? Will they even see it is the question.
There's also the sense of bribery. Okay, so if you're a political candidate and you bribe people in your election promises, right? Now, right. What if we promise you that you're going to be healthy and great, and you know you're gonna regrow your hair on your bald head and so on and so forth. You know, just do the whole snake oil trick. If you believe without question that there are a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopaths who run the world and own you like cattle and are currently spraying you like cockroaches with particulate matter, which will cause all bunches of diseases, etc., and mental illnesses in both you and your children.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's say we do that. What then? What if everybody suddenly blindly believes everything that they're told by us? Would that inherent experience of having absolute power over everybody's thoughts and belief corrupt us? And I think it would. I think it would corrupt any man.
Mm.
Now, see, well, this is the thing.
True, yeah.
This is the thing about education. I'm not sure the current model of education works for anyone, right? Even the people who think that it really works for them, actually only a small percentage of what they spent their time on during their education process has come into use. They got their degree, or they spent all those years and they had all those fun times with their friends and etc. But we're talking about like 90% wasted time of things that later became of absolutely no value. Now, maybe that programs people into thinking, you know what? I think I need to spend about 90% of my free time doing nothing of value. I've got to go get a job then.
Right. You know, but this is the mind-bending aspect of it all, right? Is that even if we could somehow overnight change the narrative, you know, really actually reach everybody in one shot, if you could get out one message, right, and you could actually be heard in a significant way by the entire planet, you know, what would you even choose to say at this point?
Is it an irrelevant argument? Because there's always going to be people who disagree. There's never one unified vision for anything, anywhere, anytime. Everybody's divided on opinions, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Always. Always. And you know, the fact that you brought up the idea that once people, you know, disengage from the standard matrix, they find themselves into another, you know, engorged in another matrix, right? Yeah, that's absolutely true. I've watched this incrementally occur with a bunch of people, and I find it fascinating. They go from believing everything to realizing that they've been lied to, then evolving into, you know, having the feeling that everyone is lying to them, okay? And then they somehow begin to settle into another area which almost resembles critical thought. And usually I try and get them to skip that process. That's what I try and encourage them to do, is to stop going through those stages and just begin to think for themselves and consider the information, verify it as best they can, look at it from a realistic point of view. And don't forget, by the way, to keep your eyes open in your own world. You know, much like this concept of the boogeyman constantly being introduced, right? You have, well, let's look at the mainstream. It's the easiest target. This idea that, you know, the terrorists are coming to get everyone. Okay?
Could you say that one more time in that voice, please?
Oh, the terrorists are coming to get everyone. Okay? You think about that, and that is one of the things that does heighten anxiety, that does become part of the great message. It's one of the political footballs. It's one of the social issues. It's one of the worries that people in different parts of this country and other parts of the world, in fact, are talking about 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on one level or another. Here's the interesting thing. The majority of the population, when have they witnessed terrorist activity in the sense that it's being presented to them? You know, the great, you know, insane Middle Eastern, you know, they want to kill us for our freedoms. Idiocy, that kind of thing. When have they witnessed it personally? Notice the dead air there.
It's I was just thinking about this. It's actually about trauma. That's the reason why you can't convince somebody of something, because it's they'll suffer a trauma, right? The body and the mind is actually hardwired to resist and to remember trauma, you know?
That's correct.
Right? It's a self-preservation instinct. So let's say, theoretically, your entire life had been built up on a series of lies that you've had repeatedly and programmed into you. Now, suddenly, a whole bunch of truths get repeatedly programmed into you that contradict those lies. Now, as a result, you suffer a crisis of personality. This means you are dealing with a form of shock that is akin to having somebody very close to you die. All right? Let's say your best friend that you've known since you were in school, that you've hung out with every day for like the last 10, 20, 30, whatever years, you know, friend as long as you can remember, dies.
Right.
The feeling of loss that you will get from that experience is almost identical to the cumulative feeling of loss you will have as all of your beliefs get set aside and facts come in to destroy them. Okay? That's why I like facts and truth, because they destroy my beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? My beliefs don't actually have a whole lot of value. The truth has value. The truth is something that can be measured. The truth is something that can be verified. A belief is something that can be destroyed by it. Therefore, one is more valuable than the other. It doesn't matter if I tell you a fact you don't want to believe. Mm-hmm. A fact is a fact, and you must accept it because it's a fact.
Right. But isn't it an interesting process
that it's people go when you have an emotional reaction? That's how you know when one of your beliefs is bullshit, and when somebody's questioning it, you have an emotional reaction. You don't have an intellectual process.
Exactly, exactly. And this is the thing that is struggled with, and I've got to tell you, it is just most fascinating to witness individuals decoupling themselves from the programming, actually going through that traumatic experience. And I think that which separates us once again as we go forward with it is the idea that some of us will embrace that process, much as you just stated. You know, you said you want the facts to destroy your beliefs. You embrace the process of evolution in thought. You embrace the process of being proven wrong so that you can refine the reality in your own mind, right? Well, you know, that is literally what I think sets a lot of people into a very small category that happen to listen to the type of stuff that we do and happen to go through the process of learning, you know, because that's really one of the great things. And, you know, your first guest there, he was talking about that, how there are individuals who kind of embrace the evolution of the information in their own little archive in their minds. They embrace that. And that's a particular sort of set of individual on this planet. And of course, it's got absolutely nothing to do with your generalized sociopathic individuals who, you know, do things for the motives that we talk about all the time. But among the population, there is a difference, and it's interesting to watch it sort itself out. I think eventually, if given enough time, you can endure the trauma of learning that your beliefs are challenged. You can endure the trauma of learning that many of the things that you did think were accurate, factual, and all of that have actually been part of the grand illusion. And isn't that just a fascinating process? I've got to tell you, it's one of the most enjoyable aspects of doing this kind of media. Vinny, what do you say about that?
Well, I think the most enjoyable aspect of doing this kind of media for me as a narcissist is the sound of my own voice, but it's also that I get to talk to people that are smarter than me, right? People that are more worldly than me, people in different locations and things like that. Because I realized right. That because I learned this in school, because I'm a lot smarter than the work that they're giving me, I get bored really, really quickly. So in order to actually be feeling like I'm not bored, feel like I'm actually alive, like I'm doing something that has purpose, I have to be around things that outclass me in some way. They have something that I don't. It's not something I want to take off them. It's something I merely want to be in the presence of. And this show has allowed me to be in the presence of some really amazing people.
Right. I heard you talking about this process, actually, I think last night, where you were saying that it's always better to be around people that are smarter than you, people that have better skills than you, because basically by your inserting yourself into situations where you have individuals who know more than you, it raises the bar for you in a sense, so that you reach for higher, higher levels of enlightenment. You reach for higher skill sets. You reach higher when people that are obviously
opposite process of people who look down on others and try to, like, say, you're a sheeple, you'll never wake up, fuck you, etc. You see that kind of truther reaction, that kind of that field that's out there, a bunch of traumatized people that are either in the depression or denial or anger stage of their grief process as they've just lost their identity. They're going to have to build a whole new one. You know, it's like, fuck, I constructed that identity of neuroses for 26 years. You're telling me I have to throw it out? God damn it!
Yeah, exactly. No, but that's a really profound statement, because, look, every time, and I love doing that. I love having people on that know so much more than me, and I have that conversation with them because I'm learning. And I'm doing it, you know, in a public way so that other people can do it along with me. You know, that's really enjoyable. But I think the process of watching the audience react, see, because I don't have that narcissistic thing. I hate the sound of my own voice. I really do. It sounds odd. I like to talk, but I don't want to hear it from myself.
Exactly what your wife said.
Oh, yeah.
You well, like to talk, but she doesn't want to hear it.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, and that's why there's been more than one Mrs. Ocelli. Anyway, yeah.
Oh my God, did I just push a button there?
Sure, absolutely. As you ever want to get a hold of somebody who has lots of interesting things to say about how I talk too much, you can talk to my first wife. But anyway, yeah. but I don't like the sound of my own voice either. So, you know, I can feel her pain in that regard. And so it's all good. But what I do enjoy, though, is just encouraging people to look at things in a different way, to abandon their, you know, really antiquated and outdated, systems, let's just say, their operating system, like as if they were computers. You know, eventually you need to upgrade in order to be able to continue in this world. So I love watching that process and encouraging it. You know, that's really the reward of it. You know, as far as like the personality thing and trying to be some sort of you can joke all you want, but there are a lot of guys who do this who are so full of their own ego that it's, you know, it's literally revolting to listen to it ooze from them.
Oh, I know.
It comes on strong like a bad case of fleas, like a dog trying to shake them off when these people talk.
Yeah, right. And that's one of the wonderful things I got to tell you about AFR as well, is that I don't get that sense. Listening to this station, I don't get that sense. Being on this station, this is one of the most interesting platforms that I've ever witnessed. And I've watched a lot of media. I've been a media observer. I've been somebody who really enjoys, especially talk radio as a forum, as an art form. And I've got to say that one of the most interesting aspects to American Freedom Radio is we don't really have an overabundance of narcissistic personalities that that just ooze that I don't even know what to call it.
Luckily, I'm rather benign like that. You know, I love myself, but I love you too.
Yeah, well, you know, look, and you take the humorous aspect of things, and look, you're even willing to take a shot to your own personality every once in a while. So, you know, so I give you that. And I appreciate that too, because believe me, I have more fun with the people that complain about what I do or have, you know, little put downs about the stuff that I do. I have more fun with them sometimes than the people that want to tell me I did something very cool or nice or whatever. But the truth is that we don't have that that atmosphere of like a collection of cults of personality here.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's one of the things I know you recognize about being on this particular network, which here I go with the obligatory thing. And I said this during my show, and I'm trying to point this out lately, is that, you know, it does help actually when people go and hit that Help Us Grow banner on American Freedom Radio and go and make a financial contribution. Or if you email the owners here and wish to volunteer something that might help to keep this operation going, I would really like to encourage that, Vinny, and I'm sorry I've taken a moment to do that with you, but
no, we almost hijacked me and Rupert Quaintance yesterday. We nearly hijacked like nearly the whole second hour to pitch American Freedom Radio and actually speak directly to the audience, because let's face it, guys, if you're listening to this, you actually are the resistance. You know what that means? It means that we're not going to be there to fight the New World Order on every front for you. We're not going to be able to report on everything. And we don't just need journalists. We don't just need radio show hosts. We don't just need YouTubers. We don't just need narcissistic douchebags with a bad sense of humor and really shitty jokes like me, okay? We need everybody in their own way, in their fabulous, fabulous shining light, to obey their instincts and employ their talents in whichever way that they feel is necessary to oppose the New World Order. Well, everybody's like, oh, I'm confused, but what do I do, Vinny? What do I do? Don't treat what do I do as a question that somebody else can answer for you. It's going to come from inside. What are you really going to do? All right, there's a whole bunch of people who can make suggestions, but only you will really be able to come up with the answer. You need to believe in yourself. The system's predicated upon you not believing that you can make a difference. That's the reason why you haven't yet.
Could not have said it any better myself. That is exactly the point. And you know what? What I'm trying to wrap everything around into during this discussion, because it sounds almost like we've gone into some sort of, you know, odd philosophical examination of what it is that, you know, we do, generally speaking.
Who gives a shit? It's late. We're back. Let's just go for a look. Wait, are you still there, Chuck?
Yeah, I just, sorry, there was like a little interruption in my internet there for some odd reason. But I was looking at that and trying to figure out what's going on. Excuse me. No, but here's the thing. Let's wrap it all around into why it is that that I've sort of steered the discussion this way. The bottom line is this. I think that what we need to begin to encourage in each other, in ourselves, is that the only change that we're going to actually be able to institute is from within. And if we don't begin to change ourselves, and if we don't begin to become parts of the solutions to all of these problems, you know, we can sit and bitch and whine about it all day long. But the more that we support the things that we actually think are of value, and the more that we participate in the world around us, and I do mean that's on a very personal level, that's on a very, going far beyond the anti-social media aspects and things like that, which are useful tools if used as tools. But once again, just like when I was talking about the overuse of cannabis or any other thing in the world, you know what? If your life becomes all about the use of a particular tool or a substance or a plant or a nutritional supplement, you know, there it is. Obsession becomes the problem. So here's the deal. If you begin to change the world around you, even in the smallest ways, you are changing the entire world, one way or another. And so participation, education, and trying to deal with things in a positive way. And I like the nice self-effacing way you put it with your description there, Vinny. That was really great. But when you look at it, we all have our own individual voices, our own individual treasures, which are not necessarily things that that can be measured numerically. They may be the talents within, they may be various other things, but you know what? We need to begin to be the individuals that we were intended to be by the action of our creation. And that to me is what the true goal of trying to deprogram people is, of trying to have these discussions is. It's not about a philosophical change. It's about a real tangible change that can be observable, absorbed, and experienced by all. And that to me is what it's actually all about. I don't think that's right at night.
That's the reason, the difference between like a talk radio show host who's just all bluster and somebody who's actually a real person is the talk radio show host that has a track record in real life of going out and doing what they say they do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, with all that in mind, Vinny, you know, I don't know where you think this discussion has gone, but hey, not bad for no script and after having already done my own show this evening. I think we've had an interesting discussion thus far, and I'm wondering if there's been any thoughts provoked in your own head here tonight that maybe weren't there until this program began.
Well, there's actually been a work of mine that I've been referring to a little bit back lately. It's an article I wrote called Conspiracy Theorists, Why People Think You're Crazy and How to Change It, right? And it's about talking to people as if they've only just woken up, right? As in, here's the entire process that you're going to go through. This is the way that people are going to look at you. This is the way your family is going to treat you. And this is how you're going to have to deal with it unless you want it to get really bad. I mean, it's just, it's never an easy adjustment, really, is it? You know, living an entire lie for the entirety of your life and then suddenly having to go in a different direction. But hey, that's it. But the one thing that I find is really painful for people is the rejection. They go up and they tell people such and such and blah, blah, blah. It's dangerous, etc. And the person says, no, don't believe it, whatever. And they're just going to get turned away. And they get discouraged. And then they start saying, nobody will ever be convinced of anything, as if they're the only, and like they were the last person to be convinced of anything, you know. I am the last. Yeah. Nobody else will wake up after me. It's just, okay. Just
there can be only one Highlander. Holy ground.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, you've got to figure out that you're in fact part of a link in a chain, okay? And there's this section I wanted to read out. I'll only read a small part of it, Chuck, because I don't want to... You know what really sucks as a talk radio show host or somebody who actually likes to go on talk radio? Sitting there while the host fucking reads something out for ages without you getting a word in. Dude, that is so irritating. And I've done it to people before and afterwards just like wanted to punch myself in the spleen. It was just shameful. So this part's called The Seventh Man. Statistically, it takes about 7 people to tell you something contrary to your belief system before you'll consider abandoning it. And not the same person repeating it to you 7 times. This is a bell curve, of course, so some might only need to be told by one person and others may need to be told by 100,000 different people over the course of a lifetime. But if you're the first person to walk up to someone and say, "Hey, did you know the world is run by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery?" The likelihood is they'll call you a conspiracy theorist or some other insult, then ridicule and ignore you. However, if you're the 7th person to walk up to them and say, "Hey, did you know the world is run up by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery?" There's a much greater likelihood that this person will say something like, "You know, a lot of people have been saying that lately," and start asking you questions about it instead of denying it outright or being abusive. Now, unless you're pretty clued up and calm, trying to convince them of any particular element of conspiracy without the oodles of documents and graphics that convince you just lying around, it might backfire when you start ripping into reptilians, chemtrails, and the flat earth. Now, people are all individuals, and it's very difficult to tell by assumption alone which conspiracy elements they're prepared to accept, and the best approach is not even to try and convince them at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and isn't that the case here? That is really true, man. I appreciate that. I really do, because the bottom line is, I think that, again, and I keep using that phrase, the bottom line, I got to stop that. The essence of the discussion here is
the
that...
The issue here is...
Yeah, there you go. See, my voice begins to drop the later it goes. Anyway, you start to think to yourself that really the thing is, when you plant something, okay, and I look at it much as planting seeds, almost as in a garden, or, you know, if you were planting a farm, this kind of thing, you don't expect the seeds to come to fruition and become a food overnight. You know, sometimes you've got to plant these things and allow them to be cultivated. So I would think of the 7-man scenario that you present there as the cultivation process.
Well,
you may be
able
to plant the
seeds. Maybe I could read out the next part of it then, because this actually does, in fact, clarify it. Because
oh, cool.
When you're trying to wake people up, I mean, let's face it, we weren't woken up by a conversation we had on the streets with a complete stranger for 5 minutes, right? We woke up because we spent countless hours researching, reading, watching documentaries, listening to alternative talk radio. Nobody put a gun to our head and made us feel that we had to do it. And we probably right. wouldn't have done it if they had, right? So, you know.
That is the essence of it too, right there, because there is no way that if somebody would have tried to force this upon me that I would have ever crossed over into, you know, into alternative information land. If they would have tried to force me on it, I would have been resistant, because I was always a resistant type to begin with. So, yeah. Yes.
You can't wake people up, because they have to go through the same grief process you just did, you know, in order to do so.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, "Hey, what did you do down the street today, bro?" "Oh, well, I talked to a conspiracy theorist with a cardboard sign, and I went through a grief process for the entire life of my personality, and now I have to start over again. I feel great, bro."
Yeah, it's
not like a drink you're gonna like just pick up at a service station or something, bro, that's just gonna just keep you awake, you know.
You know, that's true, Vinny, but there is one interesting aspect to this that is emerging to my attention lately, and that is that younger people are actually going through the process in an accelerated fashion. They are beginning to emerge through that entire, you know, the matrix into another matrix into another matrix into their own thought process. Okay, they're actually doing it at a faster rate than anybody my age or your age, or, you know, even people within 20 years striking a range of my particular age set.
I feel that's because people are actually doing things like pointing others in the right direction, you know, mentioning good documentaries, maybe a good website. But those people who fail at this are the ones who try to list or explain everything they've learned, and they just overload this new person. You know? They're just going to stop listening and start thinking you're a crazy person, and then you've really fucked it up, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. But I'm noticing that the process is accelerating in the younger generation, which I only recently came to that understanding, because up until, I would say, just 2 years ago, I really felt as though, you know, that the kids that are emerging just staring at their iPhones and doing nothing else, you know, playing Angry Birds and such. You know, really, that's what I thought. And I'm extremely happy that I've been proven wrong. And I always like to take the time to mention that even though the process does have its nuances when it comes to people that are a bit older, it seems as though the younger generation might stand a better chance. They're actually going through it a lot quicker and with a lot less of the, you know, growing pains that that all of us had to. So I don't know. I just look at it as a new trend that's emerging, and I'm really happy to see it. So I had to interject that into the discussion.
Oh, yeah. Well, people are a lot more accepting kind of things, and it's sort of like the best piece of advice I ever got was from this woman named Catherine Smith. She edits the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. I was like, called her up one day, and I was really stressed out, and I say, you know, the people are like abusing me, they're really nasty, and she goes, well, I've got two rules. Number one, don't take yourself too seriously. And number two, don't take others what others say about you personally. You know, and I thought I understood it the first time I heard it, but it actually was about a year later that its meaning truly sunk in. Because what it really meant is that you can't force others to think or act the way you want them to. So when you try to force them to adopt a belief, they won't like it. And you get a massive feeling of rejection. It's like the exact same kind of rejection any salesman gets when people don't want to buy what they're selling. But, you know, do they just quit being a salesman and just feel sorry for themselves or whatever? Or do they revisit the same unreceptive person over and over again? No, they knock on the next door and try again with something completely different. And in conspiracy terms, I call this the information grenade. You pull the pin, you chuck it in, you walk away, and maybe later it'll blow up in their face. Having having kind of attachment to the outcome, like, when I was a salesman, when I didn't have the outcome that I wanted, it meant that time and that conversation cost me money because I had an expectation to sell, and I was really good at it. And in talk radio and with activists and everything, the intention is precisely the opposite. I'm not actually trying to sell anybody anything. I'm actually allowing them something for free. I'm just giving it to them, like airtime, for example. A lot of people have to pay for airtime, and I give it to those people who I feel are good at filling it, who aren't going to like lie and just give people a whole bunch of distorted view of reality. I don't like that.
Right, and by doing so, you've now asserted your change. So your part of the conversation has now been changed. You know what I mean? If you were simply adhering to a particular outcome-based motivation, that's a whole other show you would have on your hands here, isn't it?
I mean, I have a whole bunch of advertisers and all this kind of stuff. Hey, welcome back to the Video Sports Show. We're going to sell you this, that, and the other and whatnot. And we're going to have a conversation with our very, very special guest who I've kept on hold for about 25 minutes so that we could talk for 5 minutes and then get interrupted by a commercial break and then talk for six more minutes and then have another commercial break and then say goodbye to them in a three-minute segment.
Exactly.
God! Why do people keep listening to that kind of programming? It hurts me in my brain places.
Yeah, it actually aggravates many parts of me. But anyway, look, going through the process as we're discussing, though, it is different for everybody. And I would like to hear the next part of this article that you were reading from before, because you were saying it goes through the process a little more, and I want to hear it.
Well, there's a video and everything. It's all been narrated about. I was just kind of there's a number of sections to it. So I'll finish reading the section about the seventh man. So if you're having one of these conversations and you've got attachment to the outcome, that's ill-advised if you're having a conversation. So what you can do is just change what you're talking about. I found this lesson with my family when they bring up conspiracy stuff. That's when I talk to them about it, but I no longer bring it up first because I've done so many times already. I mean, remembering that you still have common ground with people is essential to surviving as part of society, as part of a community. The problem is that we forget how we used to get along with people because our reality and our perception of it has completely been changed by the truth. So the things that we used to value, we no longer value, or at least we think we don't. And truthers often forget that they actually liked having dinner together with their family, sometimes swapping stories, talking about music or movies, playing card games or Monopoly or whatever. And it's essential that you remind yourself to participate in such, you know, quote-unquote, non-truther activities, only because to do otherwise means your social circles close off and you're left isolated, which is good for nobody. I met an ex-vegan the other night, right? And he said that at his house, everything is vegan, vegan bread, vegan pasta, the whole nine yards. But when he goes out for dinner at a restaurant or a friend's place, he eats meat and animal products. Why? Because if he was so full-on 24/7 vegan, he knew he'd never actually be able to enjoy a meal with the people in his life, which is essential for normal social function. The same rule goes for us conspiracy theorists. I mean, unless you're willing to make compromises for the valued people in your life who don't share your beliefs and keep one foot in the matrix, as it were, you come off like some kind of born-again religious zealot trying desperately to save people. And let's face it, you wouldn't invite one of them into your house for dinner so that they can rant and rave about how you're all going to hell if you don't convert.
Now, that's an excellent point, isn't it? And you know what? Here's an interesting thing and an admission. I've actually made the mistake of closing off my social circles. I've done it. I don't know. Have you actually done that to a point where you just no longer engaged with people that, you know, pretty much weren't on the right side of things for a bit? Did you ever do that for a time period?
Well, my personality, basically, as soon as somebody, no matter how valued they are in my life, leaves my vision, if I'm not around them, they almost don't exist in my mind. Like, I don't think about them, I don't worry about them or call them to see who they are or kind of thing. So the only people that stay in my life are the people that call me, that want to come around and hang out and do stuff and what have you. The people that encourage me, the people who, you know, love me, who the people who are friends with me, that kind of thing. Because you'd have to be, if you were the one that had to consistently be the person to make contact, you know. And it's not like I'm a user or anything. I'm a really good friend. I just don't have the kind of, I'm going to call up my mate for just a random reason just to have a chat. I just don't do that kind of thing. So when I became a conspiracy theorist, not only did a hell of a lot of my social circle just disappear, but because money disappeared because I was an activist instead of like a star salesman, there was limited social function anyway, because there were people that I used to drink with, which I could no longer drink with because I couldn't afford to drink. And
right.
And you suddenly realize who it is that's coming into your life and what function they actually serve. Are they indeed just an ornamental piece of furniture for the consumption of drugs and music, etc.? And I include alcohol and drugs there. Or are they actually a valued person that inspires, encourages, and motivates you in your life and actually cares about you the way that you care about them, the way that you'd hope to nourish their existence as well in a symbiotic relationship as you do with a close friend? All right? Mm-hmm. So it's like panhandling at a river. There's so much dirt in the pan, and you have to keep swilling the water around and around and around until all the dirt, all the sand, and all the sediment and all the muck gets
tossed into the river, and the only thing you were left with is these little nuggets of gold. And it's why they're so valuable, because they're very hard to find.
Mm. Very eloquent, I would say. That is part of the process when it comes to all of this. Again, the evolution of your thought will also have a resonant effect on your surroundings, your social relationships, etc. So these things are part of the equation, you know? That's just the bottom line. I mean, I'm a little different than you. I'm not the kind of person who, you know, if you're out of sight, you're out of mind to me. But then again, I don't, you know, I also turned around and walled off a lot of relationships, you know, through my own process. It wasn't other people pushing me away. It was me pushing them away because I just didn't feel as though I had the energy to invest in some of the things that seemed so terribly pointless. Now, that being said, like you said, you know, people forget that they did enjoy sitting down and having a meal with other people, you know, or they did enjoy, say, watching a movie and not sitting there and analyzing it for the, you know, for the messaging that's been embedded in it to normalize certain activities and to push particular political agendas and social memes.
Oh,
you
look,
know,
there's a Masonic
like
floor. Oh, look, there's an all-seeing Illuminati eye pyramid there tattooed on the wall. Go ahead.
Yeah, there you go. And gee, that person seems to be the archetype for an existing political persuasion that we see emerging right now in the media. And therefore, this has been actually planned ahead of time because this
Chuck,
movie.
Shut up. I'm listening to the dialogue.
Right. You know, and then you have a certain level of tolerance that that needs to be added back into the equation. You can't expect the whole world to have just simply reached the same level that you've reached. You know, you have to exist in it too. It's very much like the individuals who suddenly find a new piece of information and have decided that if you don't understand that particular piece of information or embrace it as they have, that you have now become somehow their enemy, right? This happens all the time, and not just in the truther or conspiracy theory realm, but I mean, think about this, American listeners especially. Think about this right now as the divisive political mainstream politics are emerging as they do. There are individuals right now that are questioning their own interpersonal relationships based on the fact that somebody happens to support Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders. Yeah, that's actually happening.
You know, my mouth just got dry and a whole bunch of, like, loogie just started coming up as soon as you mentioned Trump and Bernie Sanders. You know, it's just like, the scumbaggery is causing a physical reaction.
Well, yeah, I mean, much like that taste of bile that I get in my mouth whenever I have to mention Hitlery. Yeah, there it is. You know, when I talk about
darkness, my old friend.
There you go, you know, because once again, we happen to have the knowledge that the Clinton crime family is really just an offshoot of the Bush crime family, which has existed for quite a long time and et cetera, et cetera. And meanwhile, I can almost hear the voices of my former friends telling me to shut up and let them watch the game. Okay. You know what I mean? This is, you know, because a commercial came on where the Clinton Foundation was mentioned, and I have now gone into a tirade, which has interrupted, you know, insert sport here, basketball, football, baseball, boxing, UFC, whatever, all of those things, and I have now interrupted it with all of this thought process. Yeah, it's really interesting, and I think that that you have to remember that you need to socialize with other people. That's the way you're going to be able to plant these things and be able to throw those truth grenades. And, you know, sorry again, Vinny, I know I'm rambling on a bit, but these are just the random thoughts that occur to me while I'm talking to someone else that I know does some of the same things that I do. Although you're a lot more active and a lot more diversified than I am. At the moment, new things are coming, though, guys. Anyway, and believe it or not, I'm going to actually start to take things much more back to the street level where all of this really began. And there's going to be a whole lot of interesting stuff that's going to come up on my show. You guys, if you are catching this and have an interest in what it is I do on the Ocelli Effect, because I'm actually a show host and not just a babbling idiot who happens to be interrupting Vinny every couple minutes.
It was the other way around.
I guess it depends on the listener's perspective. Which one of us is the babbling idiot? Maybe we should take a poll.
You know, actually, I think we both are.
Perfect. Well, at least you can smell your own, right?
Well, you know, I've found that I like exposing scumbaggery. That's why I like this gig. But I learned long ago that the most important place to expose scumbaggery is inside yourself. There's an old saying that noticing one fault within yourself is more beneficial than noticing 1,000 faults in others.
Well, I think that's a pretty wise piece of information right there. Mm-hmm. And once again,
am I a douchebag?
Yeah. And if you're not asking yourself that question every single day, I'm not exactly sure how you found the Vinny Eastwood show. But welcome. Anyway.
Hey, you know, what's funny is I've been talking with a bit of my listeners lately, and that's one of the cool things of the gig. I like the term pseudo-celebrity, you know, because I'm kind of the only person in New Zealand who's doing it to this level with the radio show and the big YouTube channel and all of that kind of jazz. And, like, nobody else is even there's no comparison, basically. Right. Now, that means that I've garnered most of the attention in terms of the New Zealand Truth Movement. If you're in the New Zealand Truth Movement and you haven't heard of me, it's usually pretty like, what? Really? You haven't heard of it? That kind of thing. So I encounter people and people talk to me, and I'm always like replying to everybody who sends me a message or comments on Facebook usually. And as a result, I get to hear these very interesting stories. And you know what the most interesting recurring story is? Is I can't remember when it was, who it was, or what it was that they found the Vinny Eastwood show through. You know, like, that's funny, man. Like, especially, like, people who are, like, big fans have been listening to a long time, and this show will change your life, ladies and gentlemen. It actually will. You'll learn more after 1 year of listening to this show than the last 20 years of listening to other talk radio. Okay? Because we got 1/20th the advertising.
There you go. See, now it all is quantifiable. You know, and I got to tell you that I can report the exact opposite experience. People want to tell me very specifically how it is they encountered my show. They tell me exactly which friend it was, exactly which website they went to, exactly who suggested it, or they heard me as a guest on somebody else's show. Whatever it is, they always seem to have a very specific, you know, and I'm not sure how to take that. I'm wondering if, you know, like I could make the joke right here that people drop, you know, try to block out traumatic experiences and therefore would not want to remember how it is they encountered you. But I could say, on the other hand, that, you know, listen, criminal investigations and things that are extremely, like train wrecks, this kind of thing, people do tend to remember details. So either way, I'm assuming that the reaction of either remembering every exact detail as to how you encountered a show or not remembering it in any way whatsoever, I have a feeling that they come from the very same place.
It must have been the subliminals, bro. Like, I'm going to start a band called Vinny Eastwood and the Subliminal Criminals.
Nice. I like that.
I think it would be like badass, bro.
What kind of music would the Subliminal Criminals play?
Now, that's an interesting question. Because, you know, after you listen to the song, you won't know what it is you just heard.
There you go.
Because it's I love subliminal, like we're talking about. Deep, deep mind control here, bro.
It's very much like the thing I used to do as a musician. I would go on stage and we would count off 1, 2, 3, 4, and then we would stand still for about 30 seconds and people did not know what to do.
Yeah. Well, Everything needs to be changed up a little bit once in a while, but unfortunately we do have the ad breaks programmed in. So thank you very much, Chuck O'Chelly from the O'Chelly Effect. Ladies and gentlemen, go check him out on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. There's a little O'Chelly banner there somewhere. A little O'Chelly banner. Sounds like a great deli meat section in Brooklyn or something like that, you know, the O'Chelly patisserie.
Nice. God. Thank you, Vinny.
And that's because he's just so sweet. You've been listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. We'll see you again sometime, folks.